Voices of the Temple, official podcast of the Temple of Witchcraft, exploring mystery and magic through love, will, and wisdom. Hosted by Adam Sartwell. Welcome, everyone, to Voices of the Temple. This month's podcast is the Aquarius podcast. Our podcast is going to cycle through the zodiac signs throughout this year, hopefully having one each time. We'll see. But before we begin, I would like to give a little invocation to the powers that be, just to sort of sanctify our space together here and now. I call to the Great Spirit. I call to the two who move as one. Through the three rays of love, will, and wisdom, I call upon the goddess, the maiden, the mother, and the crone, past, present, and future, creator, sustainer, and destroyer, weaver of the web. I call to the God, Lord of light and Lord of darkness, Lord of life and Lord of death, God of the green and the gold, God of the horn and the red, singer of the song. Be with us now and forever, so mote it be. So today's podcast is going to be with my guest, Steve Kenson, and that part is later on in our podcast. I also wanted to bring up some of the things that are going on in the temple. The temple's doing their first ever Wheel of the Year ritual in Salem, New Hampshire. It's the Imbolc Festival on Saturday, January 30th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. If you could, please arrive a little early, like 6:45 p.m. to sort of check in. It will be at the Salem Masonic Building at 107 Main Street, Salem, New Hampshire, 03079. There's a sliding scale donation of $15 to $25, and our facilitators for the night will be Christopher Penzack and Michelle Wright. Now, if you want to pre-register, please email Pisces@templeofwitchcraft.org. That is our Pisces minister who takes care of all of the rituals. If you want more information on our upcoming Wheel of the Year rituals or any of the other things that we're doing right now, you can go to templeofwitchcraft.org and look it up. The website hasn't been updated yet to, you know, hold all of the future events that we're going to be having because, well, they haven't been completely planned yet. So as the days go on, please keep checking in with our website to see what's going on with the temple. Another thing at our website is a healing list that is put up every new moon by the Virgo minister, aka me, and I put together all of the names from people who've sent me requests. It goes up every new moon and goes through the lunar cycle. So far, I've only myself doing, you know, healing work as far as I know. There may be others doing healing work on the same thing. The healing list is designed as sort of a petition. So you can do sort of a petition spell or send light to those people. Any of the, you know, ways that we send healing energy through either prayer or, you know, through visualization is completely fine. These people have given their permission to have these healing energies sent their way. But I always throw in a little bit of the, you know, if this is for the highest good, may it be. Because, you know, you never know what the subconscious or, you know, what the higher mind really wants to have happen. So, on to Aquarius. Aquarius is one of the zodiac signs attributed to air, and it is also a fixed sign, meaning that it is in the middle of a season's energy. Aquarius is all about individuality, yet it's also a lot about the community. If you've seen the symbol for Aquarius, it looks like two wavy lines on top of each other. And I always think of it as like radio waves or, you know, energy waves, because it's more lateral, like you moves outward and sort of encompasses everything. And each one of us has to find our place within that sort of horizontal relationship. Now, when people hear Aquarius, they think of that song on, you know, the Age of Aquarius, that we are now in, supposedly, and we are beginning to embody that by the changes in social reform and the ways that we go about religion and education, and all the things that are happening now are because of the Age of Aquarius. And the more that we embody that, the more we'll be able to sort of go with the flow. The last age was Pisces. The ages go backwards, sort of, you know, throughout time, and they last a really long time. So the Age of Pisces is about that top-down energy of hierarchy, where there's one person at the head who's either had a vision or is the reigning champ, kind of like the Pope or any sort of thing like that. And that top-down relationship has sort of stopped working. A lot of people have found that they don't really like being told what to do, and, you know, it sort of takes out the ability for people who are underlings to have any initiative if they have to always turn to someone on top of them to help them out. So in the Aquarius sort of way, it's not top down. It's not a, you know, sort of a fountain falling down from this one person who may be a prophet or whatever. It's more that each person is individually going into the circle, finding spirit, and coming back with their own vision, and hopefully taking on that vision and taking the initiative to start what needs to be started by, from what you got. But that energy also has to be supported by the community. So when I visualize Aquarius energy, I think of a web, or kind of the flower of life. If you've seen that, it's kind of like circles within circles within circles, spreading out, connecting. I think of all of the pagans and witches. When we work in circle or in sacred space, all sacred spaces touch all other sacred spaces. They're connected, and their energy and power really, you know, spans through time and space, touching circles of the past and maybe even into the future. It's sort of creating our connection to each other and to spirit. So on that note, I wanted to have someone who embodied the community that, you know, we're starting here with the temple, and one of the founders, and have him sort of tell about his vision of why the temple started and what his part in the temple is, so that we can get to know more about each other, what our individual way of integrating ourselves into the community is going to be, and hopefully it'll be very enlightening. All right, I'm going to put on the interview I had with Steve, and we'll see how it goes. Hi, I'm here with Steve Kenton, founder of the Temple of Witchcraft, one of three, the Gemini minister, and vice president to the board. Hi, Steve.
Hi, everybody.
So I brought you here so that we can start our maiden voyage on, Voices of the Temple. And
for our listeners, can you describe why you and the other founders created the temple?
Well, we felt that the temple was sort of the next step in the pagan community. Modern pagans have been exploring the path in small groups or largely on their own for a very long time. And there have been a variety of organizations and groups. But in our area here in the southern New Hampshire, northern Massachusetts area, there hasn't been much in the way of an organized pagan temple. So we wanted to go that next step of taking the community and creating an organized network that could educate and support the community.
So it's very in with our podcast this time is for Aquarius, which is building that web
community.
And I know that there are a lot of heads to the Temple of Witchcraft, a lot of ministers.
Mm-hmm. The temple is a many-headed beast.
Yes. So, what is your vision for the temple?
We really conceived of the temple as, rather than it being this sort of pyramid top-down structure where you would have the supreme leaders at the top and their immediate lieutenants beneath them dictating to the great masses at the base of the structure. We instead envisioned the temple as much more of a network or a web that reached out in concentric circles from the people who started it, the founders, to the board of directors and the ministers of our 12 ministries, out to the various people involved in the temple on a ministerial or membership level, and to the greater community at large. So we wanted the temple to be a structure whereby things were very fluid and people could pursue the kind of spiritual work that they wanted to with the benefit of the support of a structure and a group and the backing of an organization that had recognition on the state and hopefully soon federal level.
You've been working on that.
We have state recognition in New Hampshire, but we're in the process of our federal recognition, our federal nonprofit status. The application is complete and is being reviewed, so we'll hopefully know soon.
Hmm. It's quite an undertaking.
It is, and it was a huge amount of work. We were very fortunate to have some help and some guidance along that path, but it is a tremendous amount of work.
Hmm. Yeah. So we've talked sort of about how there's a large web of community working together. And sort of the prime circle is your ministers. Now, you're the Gemini minister. So what does that look like? What do you do as Gemini minister?
Well, the ministers themselves are really sort of the people who set the tone for their individual ministries. We rely on the ministers to really provide vision and inspiration for the ministries that will really get the people involved in them excited to do their work. We want the ministers to really lead by example and provide a framework in which the ministers, the members of the temple can do their work that isn't necessarily the ministers dictating work to underlings, but inspiring people to follow their example.
So sort of taking on the independence and initiative to do something, but also having the community to back them up.
Exactly, and the responsibility to follow up on the work that they choose to do and to provide information to the board and to the rest of the temple about their projects and how things are going and where they're going.
Okay. So, as Gemini Minister, what's your vision?
Well, the Gemini Ministry is an interesting animal. Like Gemini itself, it's sort of split into different dimensions. On the one hand, there's the very public aspect of communication that's so strongly connected to Gemini, which is ruled by Mercury, which rules communication. And so the Gemini Ministry is responsible for all of the outer world communication of the temple, our media relations, maintaining our website at templeofwitchcraft.org, mm-hmm. Providing all of the news and updates that people see, our Facebook page, our Twitter account, all of the various means that we use to keep in touch with people who are interested in what's going on with the temple and want to know mm-hmm. what we're doing at any given time. We're also involved in handling our other forms of media, from designing and printing flyers to working with other ministries for the temple for the written word, for manuals or handouts or anything of that sort. On the other hand, you've got the sort of paradoxical side of Gemini, the sort of opposed light and dark twins that are what is described as the trickster aspect of the ministry. Part of the Gemini minister's job is to ensure that we're not taking ourselves too seriously in the temple, and that we approach things with a sense of humor. And an appreciation for the big picture, but that at the same time we don't lose sight of the little things, and that we don't get too caught up in our own grand vision, mm-hmm. That we don't appreciate how other people may see it. And a lot of it is really about being able to look at things from a different perspective or encourage others to see things from a different angle, so that they don't become tunnel visioned and particularly obsessed with one way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm. So sort of breaking down the dogma.
Yeah, very much so. Very much. Well, preventing dogma from forming, we hope. But you know, yeah, breaking it down where it does, mm-hmm. and doing it with good humor, you know, as much as possible.
Yeah.
And along the same lines of dealing with the sort of paradox aspect of things, the Gemini Ministry is responsible for the what we call the queer mysteries, the spiritual mysteries relating to the gay, lesbian, transgendered community. What are our unique spiritual roles? Where is our particular spiritual guidance? How do we relate to spirit, and how does it relate to us?
Okay, along that line, what are the queer mysteries for those of us who might not completely understand them?
Well, that's a mystery. No. seriously, it's one of those areas that we're in the process of exploring. Mm-hmm. Queer spirituality and queer mysteries is a very new experience that's really in its very earliest stages in many ways. I've become convinced through my own experiences that it's very important for everybody, regardless of their background, to have their own unique approach to spirit. Hmm. And that while I believe very strongly in the nature of inclusiveness, I also believe very strongly in the importance of individuality and individual experience. And so there's a lot to be said for spiritual sacred space that is tailored to fit particular types of people. There's a unique quality to women's sacred space, to men's sacred space, to the sacred space of elders, and to the sacred space of queer people. There are unique things that we can experience in our own sacred spaces that are specific to us, and that deepen and enhance our spiritual experience in ways that are different from the broad, inclusive sort of experiences that we can all share. And I think that one of the wonderful things about that is it gives us all our own unique ingredients to bring back to that broad, inclusive sacred space that helps to give it its range of textures and colors and experiences that are all different.
This is like the cinnamon and the apple pie.
Exactly. We're all, you know, unique ingredients bringing our own flavor to the whole mix.
Now, my own experience with the queer mysteries, I find that, you know, Wicca and witchcraft has a definite polarity because, you know, we believe in both a god and a goddess. How does the, you know, how do the queer mysteries grasp onto the gods and goddesses?
Well, the issue of polarity has been a big one where the queer mysteries are concerned in modern witchcraft, because a lot of witches have believed that that polarity exists solely between individuals. I tend to believe that that polarity exists within all of us in different measures at different times, and that we're all made up of opposite forces that are in a measure of, one hopes, dynamic balance. And that things shift from one side to the other at different times. So a lot of the queer mysteries involve that sort of strange in-between space, the whole process of balancing those mysteries, those different qualities, the masculine and the feminine, the hot and the cold, light and dark. And so just as witches have been described as those who walk between, so are queer people, the people who walk in between these different polarities and have to learn to balance them in different ways. So the two qualities of polarity are actually very complementary in the queer mysteries.
And I can see that in your in the embodiment of your own ministry is Gemini, where there are two twins, you know, sort of working together, much like in, like, fairy witchcraft.
Exactly, like the divine twins in fairy or in the voodoo tradition. Their Gemini, in many ways, is sort of the embodiment of that kind of polarity.
It's very interesting. Let's see, here's a question sort of off the topic, but do you personally call yourself a witch?
Sometimes. that's a very Gemini ministry answer.
it is.
Not to extend the pun too far, but I am of two minds about it. sometimes I find the title of witch suits me pretty well, but I have a fairly broad definition of the term. I have a tendency to see witch as a title that's not unlike shaman, in that it refers to someone with a particular relationship to spirit. So in that sense, I'm pretty comfortable with the title of witch.
Hmm.
When it comes to being specifically related to a kind of Northern European modern manifestation of a tradition of paganism, I identify a bit less with what people would call traditional witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
My own path is pretty non-traditional in that regard.
So you're sort of perfect for the Gemini ministry?
Yeah.
As the trickster?
In many ways, I am.
Okay. Another question I had was, why is the temple named the Temple of Witchcraft?
Well, we're talking about the idea of witch as a fairly broad title. Our intention in calling it the Temple of Witchcraft was to have that broad inclusiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not intending that the temple be strictly limited to what people would call traditional witchcraft or traditional Wicca. We intend for people who have a broad polytheistic relationship with spirit. But we also felt it was important to have the word witch or witchcraft in the temple's name in order to really reclaim that term and have it as something that was proudly related to our relationship to spirit, and not a term of sensationalism,
mm-hmm.
or used as an accusation, as it has been mm-hmm. in times past. So we felt it was very important that that be something that we, as a community, were willing to proudly declare,
mm-hmm.
Rather than try and hide in some way.
So it's much like the, reclaiming of gay, queer,
mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's
lesbian.
It's very much in the sense of taking words that have been used to be harmful or accusatory and making them our own,
mm-hmm.
and taking the power in those words for ourselves.
Okay. Let's see. What advice would you give to someone who wanted to volunteer for the Temple of Witchcraft?
We have all sorts of opportunities for folks who are interested in becoming involved in the temple. Basically, becoming a member of the temple is as simple as attending three of our public events. At that point, according to our bylaws, you're automatically considered a general member of the temple. So all you have to do is sign up at three events.
Now, what do you consider an event?
Anything from a public ritual to a class or workshop. Anything that's advertised and listed on our website, which is templeofwitchcraft.org, we'll have sign-up sheets at events so that we can keep track of who attends what. And if you've come to three events, you're already considered in on membership. Higher levels of membership are available with the temple for students of the Mystery School and Seminary, which teach the Witchcraft 1 through 5 course.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to be a mystery school student or a member of the seminary in order to volunteer or work with the temple. So we recommend that anybody who's interested in volunteering their time simply check out the information on our website.
Mm-hmm.
We have a listing of the 12 ministries and their areas of interest. And we have contact information for the temple available on the site. All you have to do is contact us, give us your information, let us know where you're interested in volunteering, and we will arrange to put you in contact with the temple ministers who handle that area so that they can find you something to do. Or, if you have a particular project that you're really excited to do, we may be able to set you up to do it as part of the temple structure.
Okay. Now,
I know we're setting up a database with the Temple of Witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of the database? Is, like, what can you do? What do you want to do with mm-hmm. the temple?
Absolutely. The key thing that the database is going to allow us to do, in addition to just tracking general membership information, is build up that network that we were talking about, that web of interconnection, mm-hmm. where the database is going to contain information about members' different areas of expertise and areas of interest, so that we know, for example, who in our membership is ordained and legally able to perform marriages mm-hmm. In what state.
Yeah.
So that if someone contacts us interested in a hand fasting ceremony, we can provide them with references to ordained pagan ministers who are members of our organization who are able to do that ritual for them. And likewise, we're going to be gathering information on everything from Reiki certification to expertise in midwifery, herbalism, or any number of other skills that will be of interest and use to the community, so that we can build up that network of references and serve the community as sort of a clearinghouse of information, putting the right people in touch.
Now, I understand from my own conversations with the other founders that partially, you know, an impetus to bring about the temple was the sort of, you get to Witchcraft 5 and now what? So that's sort of the place where, you know, hey, you know, you've reached Witchcraft 5, it's time to, you know, sort of give back to that community. Do you feel mm-hmm. that, you know, sort of encapsulates part of that?
Yeah, I mean, there is, after the whole process of going through the 1 through 5 levels of the training and the witchcraft classes, which now last about 5 years.
Yeah.
There can be a real difficult sort of reentry problem. When you get to the end of all of that, you've been focused on your studies, you've been focused on your final projects and your reports and your master spells and all of the amount of work that goes into that. And then all of a sudden it's all over and done with,
mm-hmm.
and you are a high priest or high priestess of the Temple of Witchcraft. And you find yourself asking, well, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And what am I going to do now? And so just like, you know, every bird has to be pushed out of the nest so that it can test its wings.
Yeah.
Every witch finally reaches that point where it's time to hop on a broom.
Yeah.
And so the temple is intended to provide a little bit of a safety net when you're eventually pushed out of the nest.
Mm-hmm.
So that you will have some options as far as what you want to do next. Because we believe that ultimately the purpose of all of that training and all of that experience is not only to improve yourself, but to have the opportunity to give back mm-hmm. and to really take all of those skills that you've been given and all of that training that you've earned through all of your hard work, and really apply it. Because otherwise, really, what's the point?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just want to say this for our listeners, that you don't really have to go through, you know, 1 through 5 to be able to work in the temple, but...
Not at all.
That was one of the thoughts that I had witnessed, you know, flowing through our consciousness when it was started.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just move on to my other questions here. What practices do you find important to your path as a witch?
Well, I find it's sort of a balance between the little things and the big things. On the one hand, people often tend to think about the craft as the big dramatic things. The initiations and the big grand public rituals and for me, the really potent, ecstatic rites that are an important part of my path.
Mm-hmm.
But those things are tremendously important. At the same time, they're also big. They're not the sort of thing that you can do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't, you know, live life as a constant series of tremendous upheavals, which is what those big things tend to bring with them.
Or transformations.
You're right, exactly. I mean, there, life is always a process of transformation, but sometimes it has to be small and slow and gradual. Mm-hmm. And so I find that a lot of the little practices matter a great deal to me in my life, just maintaining altars to my spirits, maintaining my relationship with the spirit world, with the ancestors,
mm-hmm.
Simple things like using magic for small personal acts, meditation, and just taking the spiritual awareness into everyday things, from cooking to exercising. I firmly believe in the idea that the body is a temple and occasionally a playground, and that, you know, maintaining, you know, one's health is a sacred duty. So I think that when you view those things in that way, they take on a different quality.
So, how do you incorporate your witchcraft into your daily life?
A lot of, you know, what I was saying, in the sense that it really is a matter of realizing that many of the mundane things that we take for granted are sacred in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not all just a matter of big rituals with costumes and props. It's also the little rituals that we perform from day to day, you know, making dinner and
blessing the food
and, appreciating, you know, the first, you know, breath of morning air when you go outside, and taking a moment to stand on the steps and watch as the sun is coming up over the trees, and to look out the window at new fallen snow and take a moment to appreciate that stillness inherent in it, and just to feel that connection.
So now we've talked about what you find important and what your practice is, but what flavor of witchcraft or ecstatic, you know, practice fascinates you? What draws you?
Cherry. No, grape.
Yeah.
Flavor.
My own flavor would be, you know, more of the spell work, the, you know, psychism, those sort of things. Where do you feel your flavor is now?
I guess that in terms of technique,
mm-hmm.
I am most strongly drawn to a variety of ecstatic shamanistic techniques, particularly with relation to spirit. I've had some personal experience with trance possession that really transformed my personal practice and my personal relationship with spirit. And that has been a focus of a lot of my practice. And it has influenced a lot of my views on various things, including what I was talking about before, about the idea of sort of individualized or personalized sacred space,
mm-hmm.
And the importance of that. So I guess that the ecstatic techniques have been very important for me in following my path.
Okay. Now, when you say ecstatic, are you thinking more of the possessory stuff, or are you thinking, like, if it were going to give a label to it, what would you give it?
Well, I guess I would define ecstatic as those ritual techniques or practices that allow you to get out of yourself in some way, or to get out of the way of yourself,
mm-hmm.
In a manner of speaking. The kind of practices that break down boundaries and break down barriers and really allow you to experience the present moment in a very profound way. So, for me, those experiences range from shamanic drumming and dancing techniques to the possessory work mm-hmm. that I mentioned, to exploring sexual techniques and other ways of really being just so fully present and invested in the moment that the connections to your past and your future sort of melt away, and you're more genuinely yourself in that moment than you are who you were or who you think you're going to be.
Fascinating. Well, thank you for this interview, and many blessings on your Gemini ministry, and I hope that you have lots of success.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Well, that's it for now. I hope you've enjoyed our podcast. We'll do a quick devocation. Thank you to the powers of Aquarius for aiding us in experiencing this wave and web. We thank the Great Spirit and the two who move as one. We thank the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. We thank the Lord and the Lady who move through us and work with us. May we recognize your presence in our lives. Blessed be. And merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be, everyone. You've been listening to Voices of the Temple. The contents of this podcast are copyright 2010 of the Temple of Witchcraft. For more information, please visit templeofwitchcraft.org.